Accession number 4423, reel number 2.
Colonel Lewis, reel 2. Was it easy to get troops for the Somaliland Camel Corps? Was recruitment easy or not?
Yes, there was great enthusiasm for joining the Camel Corps. If you wanted, say, 20 recruits, I suppose you could get 200 men offering their services very quickly.
And how did you go about getting recruits? Did you have special recruiting safaris, or did you get them through the chiefs or the district commissioners, or what?
Normally, through the district commissioners, who would tell the head men of the tribes that so many people were wanted. So, for instance, Barao and Hargate, Barao is the principal place. They would hear that the Camel Corps was looking for men, and they would come into Barao and wait until the offer went out, and then present themselves. If you wanted 10, well, you certainly could get 100 people recommended by their head man or the district commissioner for service in the Camel Corps. They were it was greatly sought after.
And how did you select from these 100 men? Just on physique or general standard of health or intelligence or what?
Appearance and intelligence and strength mainly, and lack of deformity of any kind, and good eyesight. There were doctors, European doctors out there who would medically examine these men.
Were these civilian doctors or doctors who were part of the Camel Corps?
They were civilian doctors, part of the colonial service. In Somaliland, when at that time, there were probably 5 or 6 in the country at any one time, allowing for 2 or 3 on leave.
Was there any height requirement? Did they have to be of a certain height, or would you take people of any stature?
Oh, the Camel Corps liked to have rather tall men. They are considered to look more imposing, and also, of course, loading up camels and so on, long arms and strength and height is quite important.
And what about the general standard of living of the troops as compared with the civilian Somali population at large? Did it compare favorably with the civilian standard of living or not?
Yes, it was, you see, it was constant. They got their rations every day. Somaliland was subject to droughts of tremendous severity. Perhaps in some parts, a third of the population and the stock could be killed off by a drought. Now, in the Camel Corps, of course, while this was going on, the soldiers had their regular rations. And therefore, on one or two occasions, we went out to assist the tribes during these droughts. The country smelt in a most obnoxious way with the dead camels and stock scattered about all over the place, and the wild animals too dying from it. These droughts were devastating to the social life of the people.
Well, what could the Camel Corps do to help the people under these conditions?
We helped form camps. we could go out with our camels and take water to some people who were trying to get in. And we could give the tribes affected by the drought a feeling that the government was doing something about the drought. We could take out sacks of rice and so on the burden camels. In the Camel Corps, by the by, we had a troop of burden camels to carry loads. They weren't trotting camels. The camels that the combatant troops rode were Arabian. They were really dromedaries. They were single-humped animals, and they came from Arabia. And we sent over people to buy them in the Aden markets, on the Arabian markets. And you see, in addition to that, there were the burden camels. So we had a troop of burden camels. We could use that to carry relief supplies, tents, this sort of thing.
And were these relief supplies handed out gratis to the population?
Oh, quite definitely, yes, certainly. And some Somalis, families, women, perhaps children, would become wedded to these camps, and they were difficult when the drought passed. It was rather difficult to get them to go back to their normal life because they were getting rations brought. That's a great thing to the Somali, the feeling that his food is coming every day.
Was there ever any trouble in getting rid of the people who were relying on these handouts then? Or did they have to be driven away or something?
I think the district commissioners used all the influence with the headmen to try and bring these camps, close the camps up. But there were difficulties. They hung on much longer than we wanted, than the government had envisaged. There was that problem, yes.
Coming back to the troops themselves, were the troops smart? Did they like their uniform, or were they slovenly, or what?
They were very smart. The Somali is rather vain. I think very vain. And he likes dressing himself up, and once he'd got the concept of military smartness, and perhaps a red sash for a sergeant and the yellow badges on his uniform, and they kept their pagris very clean and smartly put on. Oh yes, they liked dressing up, and they seemed to pick up the idea of the military smartness. It was rather astonishing that they did, because they've nothing comparable with it in their own tribal lives.
What did their uniform consist of?
Well, it was a bit like the Indian Army in some way, a puggri that was wound round the head very smartly, to a rather peculiar shape, but very impressive looking, and a little collar thing underneath that just stuck through, very much like some of the Indian regiments. And then a tightly fitting jersey, with, say, Somaliland Camel Corps on the shoulders, and then a cummerbund, a khaki cummerbund with a red sash, and a belt and a bayonet, and then shorts, blue puttees, and sandals. And on a smart man, a well-built man, and most of them were, this uniform looked very smart indeed. I brought two to London once for the coronation. At least I found them in London in Hyde Park in the camp, and they caused a big stir when I went. My wife and I took them round London. People said, "But they're very smart looking men, these, and so clean looking." I took them to tea at one of the big London hotels and sat there with my wife. And my wife was an artist. She was painting, drawing one of them. So I had to get him round rather often. And we had tea, and the waiter brought everything. And we they were too polite to say that they didn't like anything at all that they could see. But when we I offered them food, they said, well, no, I don't think we'll eat now because we brought our food from Somaliland.
What colour were the puggris and colours?
Khaki colour, a light khaki, very light khaki.
And you said earlier that many of the troops had wives. Were they all married or just a proportion of them?
Oh, I think nearly all were married. I was not married, and the Somalis could not understand that. They used to tackle me sometimes and say, why aren't you married? You're very fit, you've got some money, and you look all right. Why aren't you married? They couldn't understand that we would go on with in our bachelorhood.
Did they press you to take a Somali wife, or did they expect you to marry within your own race?
It would be dangerous to think in terms of the Somali girls. Some of them are very attractive, very, very pretty. Long arms and very stately girls, some of them. But they would hide their faces if they saw a European coming near the encampments. But if you met them alone, sometimes in the jungle, out in the bush, when they were looking after sheep or camels sometimes, men mainly looked after the camels, you would see how attractive they were, and they might smile to you if they got to know you, if you were camped around there some little time. But the Somali, it would be dangerous to show any interest in their women folk. The Somalis wouldn't like it. They would take it out of the girl, in all probability. They might even kill her.
Even if she was an unmarried girl?
Oh, yes. Yes, one of the big riots at Hargeisa, which I took place, was because a girl had, which was unusual for Somalis in a way, had fallen in love with a man in another tribe and had gone off with him. We had a big riot there. The Camel Corps was called out. I was in command of C Company at the time, and it all happened so quickly. We managed to quell all this in a few hours. And the government was very pleased with what we did because we inflicted no casualties on the tribal people. Some years afterwards, they had similar trouble between these two tribes, and the police, with respect to them, tried to deal with the matter then, and there were heavy casualties. They killed about 40 people or something like that. But, yes, there could be trouble with the with their marriage customs and their intertribal relationships.
Can you recollect which year it was when you quelled this particular riot, approximately?
I think I left Somaliland in 1928, and I had been adjutant in Barao. And I took command of C Company. I should say that the riot took place late in 26 or early 27. It caused a big stir in the protectorate. There were signals flying about all over the place to Aden, telling them to stand by and send the air force. And the treasurer of the protectorate government told me that he thought I'd saved them £250,000, because if Aden had sent over troops, it was unknown to me, the protector would have to pay for them. And the treasurer said, well, you've done a good work for us because you've saved us this large sum of money to bring troops over here to quell this. You see, there were a lot of Europeans for the time being, a short time, in Hargeisa at that time, and there was great consternation as to whether the Camel Corps would be able to restore law and order between these two tribes. And to the best of my knowledge, it was all over one girl.
So there was no question of the European officers serving with the Somaliland Camel Corps forming any liaisons with any Somali women?
I wouldn't say that it never occurred. During the war, the 1418 war and the campaign against the Mullah then, there were, of course, a great variety of officers came out to Somaliland in one capacity or another. And some, I just say, weren't brought up to the same traditions as their successors after the war, who were making the army a career. I don't think anybody that I was in the Camel Corps was in liaison with Somali girls. I am sure it would have led to the officer being sent out of the country pretty quickly.
But most of the, well, perhaps all of the British officers in Somaliland would not have been married. So did the lack of female company cause any problems, or were the officers perfectly content with no female company?
I think the fact that there were no European women out there, it was difficult to accept this as a normal state. And quite often I heard people say, well, when I boarded the P&O to go home, it was wonderful to see some European children. You see, we saw no children, European children. And I remember people talking like that. I think gradually one began to see the charms of the Somali girls, perhaps, when one had a chance of seeing them. One thought they were rather nice, and certainly very, they had wonderful teeth, and they had beautiful smiles, and their hair style was rather peculiar, very attractive, and they had good figures, and they had very long arms from the Camel Corps. In a minute, you'll think that I was falling in love with one every day, but that wasn't so. One became conscious of them, I think, from the fact that there were no European women out there, but one kept one's distance. Certainly one did.
When you first arrived at your garrison in Somaliland, what did you understand from what you were told that your role was going to be, your personal role and your personal work? Was it just the same as the work you would be involved in Britain, or did you understand that the work was going to be different from that to which you had been used in Britain?
The Camel Corps was a mobile unit, and one soon got the idea that one was not going to be very static. The Camel Corps would be marching out, and one would have to know something of the tribal setups. One would be in close relationship with the district commissioners, you see, socially, and one would talk to them about the Somalis, the tribes, and so on, and one knew where, if there was some possibility of some trouble coming, one was much more in touch with the administration while in the Camel Corps than one would have been perhaps in a King's African Rifle Battalion somewhere in a cantonment down in Kenya. One was part of the country. I think that was one of the attractions about it. And then one was on one's own quite a lot, perhaps with a patrol of the Camel Corps. living with the men out there, and they were very good to one. They waited on one. They helped one make a camp, and they realized one had to eat different food from there. Then they might even reprimand one for not eating enough food. And one's own personal staff, one's steward, one's boy, as they were called in those days, Ibrahim Mohammed was mine. He would certainly have his eye on me to make sure that any water I touched was boiled and properly treated. He would be constantly, he would advise me and say, don't touch that tub. See?
And sir, you mean to say that your servant didn't require close supervision as far as hygiene and so on was concerned? Did you have to closely supervise your servant as far as hygiene was concerned? I mean, his handling of food and so on?
No, on the whole, the Somalis are very clean people. And they're rather like the Arabs in that way. Of course, they are basically Arab. They come from Arabia originally. Two families, I think, started the Somali tribes. The Arabs keep their hands very clean because they're going to eat. Well, they have a clean hand and a dirty hand. And the Somalis are like that. I had a very experienced boy who didn't want me to get ill because if I died, he would lose his job, one thing, I mean, in a material sense. And he became very devoted to me. I went back to Somaliland in 1950 to be private secretary to the governor there. And this man, Ibrahim, he walked about 100 miles from the middle of Abyssinia to come and see me. He had taken up land in Abyssinia after the defeat of the Italians in the 39-45 war. Those Somalis who went with the British army were given land up there in Abyssinia, and he'd been lucky enough to get some. But he came walking, I don't know, it may have been 200 miles. He came all the way to Hargeisa to see me and salute me, as did many of the Camel Corps who'd served with me. They liked the Camel Corps, and they seemed to have an affection for the officers. Of course, we used to play polo, and there were some Somalis playing polo, and then I used to play hockey with the Camel Corps. It was the most murderous game you've ever seen.
Why was that?
Well, because they didn't know the rules very well, and they'd swing their sticks all over the place. And I remember playing at Berbera, the great match of the year, the sort of Eton and Harrow match, Oxford and Cambridge match, was the Camel Corps versus the police down in Berbera, and it was blue murder. But then I was very fit and very young. I could run like a stag. I was being in Somaliland, I got very sort of physically hard and fit. I was glad there wasn't to be another game for at least a year. This was an annual event, but I happened to play for the Camel Corps.
Can you explain to me what the daily routine would be, if any, as far as you were concerned, in the Somaliland Camel Corps?
Well, normally in Barao and Hargeisa, Hargeisa being the pony company, and Barao, I would get up very early, probably about 6, and go to the landing strip on my pony and do some maneuvers to train the pony. And in the meanwhile, the company was forming up and to start work. If we were going to do drill, well, they were all mounted on their camels, and we'd start doing mounted drill. If it was foot drill, well, they said, then we'd have to go through the usual routine of training, the musketry and so on, to get proficiency pay. There was proficiency pay. They had to be a first-class shot or something or other to get this, and they would train up through, rather like the British troops at home, go through this routine every year. I think a general officer commanding in at the end of the collective training period, well, at Aldershot, said, "Well, gentlemen, tomorrow we're all bloody fools." And that was, we had to go through it all again. perhaps the language won't suit, would it?
No, that's all right. And then after that, what would come next in the day, after the training?
Well, there was not much work in the afternoon except the office work. You'd go in, there were conduct sheets, there were records of equipment that had to be kept up. I dare say, sometimes a year, people would, those that like resting in the afternoon would rest. I personally didn't like sleeping in the afternoon much, so I did very little. I used to prefer to be awake. I always felt rather drowsy later on. And then you seem to be working up after tea. You would probably have it in your own tent, as they were when I first went out, and then later bungalows. You would have your tea, and then you would go to the tennis court, the local tennis court, where we used to play tennis, or again go out on horses and ride round, do some polo practice in the evening, and then assemble near the mess later on before dinner. We, after time, we were wearing mess kit there even. we'd assemble outside for a whiskey and soda or two, and then have the evening meal. The nights for in Somaliland, as they are in throughout Africa probably, are intriguing, enthralling. Real poetry.
In what way?
Well, beautiful. The starlit nights, without no cloud, and you could hear in the distance the Somalis drawing water from the well, singing away. Then the golden-breasted starlings flying round, where, say, in Barao, they'd be all over the veranda. These Hargeisa, the same. These beautiful golden-breasted starlings. They'd be singing all night up in the trees. Well, there were trees, of course. There were some places where you, not a tree for 100 miles or more. Yes, they were enchanting, the nights. And, of course, we were very fit because we were living a rather strict physical discipline. And you need to, because the Somalis were very fit, and if one's going to go with them, one's got to be fit. You can't get unfit. The Somalis, once they decide to go in for the army and so on, they can ride all day.